Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
And welcome to In the Know, the Hornets 24/7 podcast. Your knowledgeable hosts are Michael McNamara.
Me and a grizzly bear, I'm betting on me.
And me, Ryan Schwan.
I've been playing some Dungeons & Dragons because I'm really cool like that.
Let's get it started. All Hornets, all the time.
Welcome to the show. The Hornets just completed an 0-3 week, losing to Sacramento, getting crushed by Chicago, and making it interesting at least for most of the game against Portland. I don't even know where to go from here. We've got a lot of losses piling up. We're now 4-23. It's pretty likely we could hit the All-Star break and still have exactly 4 wins. Michael, do you see a light at the end of the tunnel? Is this a good thing? What do you want to say?
Yeah, I mean, the light at the end of the tunnel, you bring up All-Star break. The Hornets are going to be plenty rested because they're one of the few teams in the league who will have nobody outside of Michael McNamara of Hornets247.com representing them at the All-Star game. Yeah. Not an All-Star, not despite all the youth, not anybody on the rookie or sophomore team. And they haven't been announced yet, but I'm going to go ahead and place my bets that nobody from the Hornets gets entered into the dunk or three-point contest.
I would not disagree with that.
There, maybe Lil Wayne makes it into the celebrity game.
Right, maybe.
That could be the but I'll be down there covering all the non-Hornets. Maybe I'll corner Chris Paul and make him feel guilty or even trap David Stern and talk to him about that trade again. There won't be any Hornets down there.
Yeah, I'm sure there's plenty of former Hornets you can find.
Yeah, that's exciting. But yeah, 0-3 week.
Well, don't escape yet. So how do you feel about that? Do you think it's justified that there are no Hornets at All-Star weekend at all?
Yeah, I mean, the only one you could maybe make a case for is Gustavo, and maybe if he was drafted fourth instead of Tristan. I mean, it came down to a couple of big guys, and you had him, Markieff Morris, Tristan Thompson from Cleveland, and he didn't do any, you know, much better than either of those guys, and those guys were lottery picks, so the name recognition is going to get him in. But yeah, I think he was the only one who could have come close. Sad sight.
That's grand, isn't it?
I think Gordon could I at the beginning of the year I think Gordon could have been there. I think if healthy, Gordon would be an Eastern Conference All-Star. Yeah. And, you know, looking at their reserve roster, but But I don't even know if he could have made it if healthy. I mean, I think James Harden's having an excellent season, and he was left off the team. So
right.
It's hard to envision Gordon doing any more than he would have. So
yeah, and I mean, I would take Harden over Gordon anyway, so that makes me so sad. I just remember looking at that draft and drooling over Harden. It's like, oh, I wish there was some way we could get him.
Well,
not that we had a chance to or anything.
Oklahoma City is giving out 2 max contracts. They have Harden and Ibaka coming up soon.
Maybe.
Have to lose one of those guys, so maybe.
Yeah. I don't know if you had that decision. I think other decision would be bye-bye Ibaka.
Yeah, I think that big guys are harder to come across. So plus, I think you could pay Ibaka less. But, man, think about the problems of Oklahoma City. They could only keep 3 out of the 4 of those guys. Isn't life so tough?
Yeah.
But back to this week. Yeah, that Sacramento game, that was that one had fans screaming tank job. I mean, the Hornets get out to a pretty big lead and then all of a sudden lose a game that to a team that just happens to have the second most losses in the Western Conference. You buying that at all? Conspiracy theory or did Sacramento just play better that night?
Well, the question is there anybody else who's been watching the games this season in the fourth quarter when other teams start trying hard? The Hornets don't have the talent on the floor. I mean, if they had Jack, I bet it would have been a different story. If they had Gordon, it definitely would have been a different story. But, I mean, where the hell – I mean, even Landry would have helped a little bit, but where is this – where is the offense to come from? I mean, I don't know how many times I can say it, watching Vasquez and how many times I've written it. He's fine as a backup point guard, but good God, the guy cannot penetrate when somebody actually locks in on him on defense. Unless he gets the perfect screen, which happens very rarely, will he, you know, make it past the three-point line successfully?
Yeah. Yeah, they... I started to call whoever was defending him the chastity belt. Let's put it that way. But yeah, the surprise of that game was Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he was a stud coming out this year, the last guy drafted. I mean, it was funny watching that game. Jimmer Fredette couldn't see the floor because Isaiah Thomas was just was balling out of control. So. I don't know. I don't know if even a non-tanking Hornets team would have been able to stop him on that night.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, people are blaming Monty. They're blaming you know the organization tanking. I mean, we have a bad team. I mean, there's just no other way to. There's so little talent playing. I mean, and where you would find the talent on our team, it's injured. So. You know,
yeah, but I mean, it's funny that you said, I mean, people who didn't watch the game, if they look at the box score, Grievous Vasquez had 29 that game and he had those 20 points on 9 shots.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't know, you watch the game and it's just different. And especially in that fourth quarter, whether it's other teams trying, you know, I think a lot of the guys get worn down. This is a team, as we've said before, of 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th men, guys like that are used to getting 15 to 20 minutes. Vasquez played 40 in that game. Is it possible that these are, you know, these are guys who are just wearing down because they're not used to playing these kind of minutes?
Oh, I don't know. Most of them are young. I'm not sure if I'd say they're wearing down. It's just, you know, if they get 15 minutes and they go against the other team's second unit, and that's a reasonable thing to request of them. But, I mean... who on this team who's starting is going to be able to claim the athletic advantage over their opponent most of the nights? I mean, you can say that, you know, Ariza can do it sometimes. And Jason Smith, maybe, every once in a while?
Yeah. Yeah, and speaking of Ariza, this is something that's bothering me, I guess, because, I don't know, we still haven't found what this team's goals are, but to me it can't be to make the playoffs this year. It's got to be right. To build to the future. Ariza gets 46 minutes 2 nights ago. He's averaging about 40 since coming back. I mean 39 over the last 5 games, what is the point of this guy playing so many minutes when there's obviously young guys that need to be developed behind him that need these minutes in a season that basically doesn't matter?
You want my rationale?
Yeah, I want you to try to explain it to me to where you could actually buy what you're saying.
Sure, he is a young veteran. He's 26 years old, and you know, in the next couple of years, when the Hornets are trying to turn around and compete, they expect him to be the starting small forward, and there's no reason to make him grumpy by cutting his minutes right now for, you know, our, you know, good buddy Aminu, who has not proven really that he can do much of anything.
That just made me throw up a little bit when you said that. That can't be logic. I mean, if that's the reasoning, I mean, if Ariza really, they really envision Ariza as the starter down the line when this team does pull itself back into playoff contention, I don't know. Then maybe I know less than I think I do. That just doesn't seem to make any kind of sense to me.
I'm not saying it was a good argument. I'm just saying that. Yeah. He's the kind of guy Monty likes, and I mean I can't say Aminu has played himself into a lot of minutes. I can't say he shouldn't get a bigger chance, but you know.
Yeah.
It's hard. I mean, I'm actually even more and more convinced every game I watch that Aminu is not going to be a small forward. I mean, his best chance is becoming a power forward, and then, like, you know, of the Daryl Arthur or Hakeem Warwick mold, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, it's got to, I don't see, you say that he hasn't earned the minutes, but to me, I don't know, earning the minutes is if you're trying to win the game. I just don't see the harm in putting Aminu out there for 25 to 32 minutes every game if you're going to lose anyway and see what you got. I mean, I've seen marked improvement and nobody's really, you know, believed in this guy. They don't have the kind of practices and time, you know, in between games to really help develop him. He's got to kind of be thrown into the fire this year, and I guess I just don't see the point of Trevor Ariza playing 46 minutes on this team when there's so many front court guys who need the minutes. But
I agree, it's stupid. I was trying.
Yeah, no, the Portland game, Hornets stuck in that, as you kind of said in your recap, very wisely. They double teamed LaMarcus. What that did open up, though, for Portland was Jamal Crawford, who just got crazy hot.
Yeah, but I mean, can you really say that that's opening it up for Crawford? Because what Crawford wasn't doing wasn't playing off of Aldridge at all. He was just dribbling dribbling until they did a switch, until he had Gustavo or another big man on him, and then he squared up, dribbled between his legs, took a sidestep, and shot. I mean, that wasn't like brilliant basketball. That was just, he got hot for, you know, seven shots. And for a moment there, I actually thought that was going to murder them, because he got hot for a brief period, and then near the end of the fourth, the Hornets did pull right back to like really close, and it was because he was still trying to make those hero shots, and he missed like three in a row, and one of them was just like leaning sideways from the three-point line with 17 seconds left on the clock. I mean, it was just stupid stuff, which is, you know, Crawford has been known to do that kind of stuff. So I was thinking for a while, I was like, oh, that's how we're going to get back into this game. But it didn't work out.
I think you just absolutely hate scores. You're murdering a guy who went for 31-8, taking only 16 shots. That he was almost the reason that Portland lost that game. You tell me all the time how horrible Monte Ellis is.
I would take Crawford in a second over Monte Ellis.
Yeah, no, I mean, that game made me wonder. I know before Dell really, really decided to blow it up, you know, I know he was thinking about making one last run with Chris Paul, and Jamal Crawford was a target in that scenario. And it was, you know, it was interesting to just think about for a second what this team would look like if you know, he could have brought David West back on a short-term contract, brought Landry back and Chris Paul and had that team and added a Jamal Crawford to take 30 of the 48 minutes at that shooting guard position. So that's really all I was thinking about during that game, that and get Trevor Ariza off the floor. I want to see more Lance Thomas.
Really?
No, not really.
So were you impressed by Lance Thomas in that game? Really or not?
No. I mean, I think
he's one of those guys, you look at his stat line, and in the minutes that he had, he was pretty impressive, if you look at his numbers. But he just, I mean, you watch the game, and he's frantic. He's desperately trying to make an impression, and it puts him in as much trouble. Even though he did grab boards and got some points, it put him in trouble a lot of the time out there.
Yeah, and I mean, he had a by far a team worst minus 16 in that game. And so, yeah, certain stats are fairly impressive. I'm more disappointed by kind of how Gustavo played this week. I mean, I think he's kind of a victim of his own intelligent basketball play.
Yes.
Monty's saying, okay, here you go, here's your minutes now, but he's never going to take a shot that, you know, isn't a high percentage shot. He's not going to try to make the difficult play. He's just gonna, you know, do the right thing every time. But on a team that's 4-23, on a team that really doesn't have anybody who could go out and make excellent plays, you know, this is his opportunity to kind of push himself a little bit, and it doesn't seem like he's been doing it.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah, I've been kind of a couple times. I was like, go up with that. I mean, he does like these really nice little dump offs in the post, but it's part of the problem. I mean, Okafor is never so let me just stop for a second. In the past 10 years of Hornets basketball, have we had a capable interior passer who wasn't the point guard that you can think of? I only have one name on the entire team for the entire period of time.
I mean, Vlade was like 12 years ago, right?
Yeah.
I don't remember. This was a little Derek Coleman, but that was, again, that was about 10 years ago. But yeah, I mean, you're really stretching it. When was Anthony Mason?
Anthony Mason was, I think he's at 10, so I guess he would technically be there.
Yeah.
But I mean, the only reasonably decent passer we've had who was taller than, say, 6'3" was Mashburn.
Yeah.
That's it. I mean, this team has not had interior passing forever. I mean, P.J. Brown, great player, couldn't pass. David West passed every once in a while, but preferred to shoot most of the time. Okafor can pass. Eldon Campbell couldn't pass. I mean, so McGlure, I mean, it's a joke thinking of him passing. Yeah. So, I mean, Ione is suddenly doing these bounce passes to guys who are just not expecting them. And the only one who seemed ever ready to, like, just grab that ball when it bounced to them and shoot is Smith. And taking that one step further, when Ione plays next to Vasquez, it's a different situation.
Yeah.
I mean, so I really think that when those three guys, I mean, they've been in practice a lot. I think that that helps them work as a group, as the three of them. But it's just, I don't know. I was hoping for a lot more when he entered the starting lineup, and he's given me the rebounding I wanted, and he's giving me the blocks and the hustle. But his scoring, he's just not going up with it. And his passing, like that game against Portland, he had like six passes where they were just really good ideas. You're just like, yes, that's perfect pass. But they just never made it there. Or it went off the guy, and the guy was just stunned to have it. He just kind of like, whoa, and stepped back instead of trying to put it in the hole. So, I don't know. Come with time, hopefully, right?
Yeah, there's two things I'd really love to see them use Ion for. The first is I would love to see him in a Rick Adelman type of offense. Get him that ball in the low post and do the, do the brush dribble handoff where, I mean, the Kings used to be famous for this with Chris Webber, where Bibby would enter the ball into the post and then essentially, use Webber, even though he had the ball, as the pick man, and Webber would have the option of either handing the ball to Bibby, who would have a baseline layup, or faking that handoff and then go into the middle for an easy shot, either a hook shot or layup. I would love to see. I think Ion has great decision making. I think that he has the passing skills to work in an Edelman type offense. I'd like to see that. And then the other thing is, they run this play 3 to 5 times a game for Emeka Okafor that basically gets Mech an open 10 to 12 footer right in front of the free throw line. And, you know, why aren't they running that play for Ion? Or better yet, you know, Jason Smith, you know, that's just a play that Monty's drawn up that's really nice. I just don't understand why it's going to Okafor and not Ion. So I'd like to see that same kind of action, that same kind of play with Ion hitting that 10 to 12 foot shot.
So just really quick about Okafor. I know there's a lot of people talking about his improved offense and, you know, so on. Emeka Okafor, his offense may be more diversified than what we're seeing this year. It's not improved.
No.
The guy's not any better at putting the ball in the basket. I mean, his best years in putting the ball in the basket, by the way, were his, you know, rookie and sophomore seasons, where he actually averaged like 15 points a game. The guy got the ball a lot and made efficient scoring. I mean, but don't fool yourself into just because you're seeing a few more jump shots out of him this year that go down, that he's any better of an offensive player, because he's not.
Yeah, and I mean, even as far as efficiency, I mean, there was a time last year where he was shooting near 70% from the field.
Yeah.
Before he got injured, before that horrible January swoon that the Hornets went on. So, yeah, I mean, he could do a couple different things now, and at least that poses a threat where theoretically that should open it up for other Hornets, if there were any other Hornets with any kind of offensive skill set. But,
right. Yeah,
it's still not to the point where I think other teams are going to be banging down the door to throw 2 years and $28 million at him after this year. So still don't think he gets traded, unfortunately.
Well, we'll see.
Another week went by, another zero wins, and Chris Kamen still hasn't been moved at all. Any new thoughts on that situation?
Well, he sprained his ankle in shoot-around. So isn't that kind of what we were hoping they were trying to avoid, was stupid-ass injuries like that?
Yeah.
I mean, what do you even say to that? I want Kamen off the team for a second-round draft pick early in the second round, and you know how I feel about second-round draft picks.
Yeah, and I mean, it looked like, you know, Hornets fans were excited, you know, thinking we got a steal for Xavier Henry, but he really hasn't been doing anything, and that Hornets second-round pick could be the first pick of the second round, which is a beautiful pick to have, because you still have plenty of guys with first-round talent on the board, plus you don't have to give them that, you know, that
guaranteed
deal.
Money.
Recouping a second round pick, you know, even going back to Memphis and asking if they want to use Chris Kamen for a year for that pick back wouldn't be the worst. But, I think a lot of teams are going to wait till after the All-Star break. I think that stretch between, like, say, March 1st and March 15th is just crazy. I think more players are going to get injured between now and then. I think more teams are going to talk themselves into the fact that they think that they're contenders. I still think at the end of the day, the Hornets get a C-plus asset for Kamen and some more flexibility.
I mean, really, I think the best opportunities for trading Kamen are those teams that are just on the bubble and they're not sure they can get in, or they think that having just like one more big man will get them over the top. So, I mean, I really hope they're looking for places like, well, Houston, which has, you know, exploded to the top. But, you know, I was thinking a team like Houston, a team like Memphis, a team like Minnesota, New York is a good one. Milwaukee is a good one. Those are all teams that, you know, they're right there. They could just make the playoffs, why not, you know, swing for Kamen just for, you know, that little opportunity?
Yeah, and I think what people have to remember is that it becomes an arms race. I mean, you remember that year where it just seemed like everybody was getting traded? You know, you had the Shaq trade to Phoenix, Dallas countered with picking up Jason Kidd, yeah. And everybody was just moving and responding to each other. It looks like the Lakers will trade Pau Gasol at some point. I don't think they're getting Howard for Bynum, so I think they move Gasol. And let's say Gasol goes to a team like Houston in a three-way trade. Now the Lakers need another big, or another team who's fighting with Houston for a playoff spot needs a big. And I think people start responding. Right now there's really nothing to respond to. And I think once the bigger moves start going down, Kamen could be pursued. But there's one thing that I haven't really seen brought up that I think could be really interesting in this situation is, you remember a couple years ago where the Thunder basically re-signed one of your favorite players, Nick Collison, to a really weird contract?
Yes.
So,
yeah.
Go ahead.
They basically gave him, they had about, I think it was $10 million under the cap at that point. So they signed him to a 3 or 4 year, 20-something million dollar deal. But instead, like all 10 or 12 million of it, was put into a signing bonus placed that year on the cap to take up what space they had. And that left only the, you know, something like $3 million a year for the rest of the next 4 years, which are the actual life of the deal. So all the money went on the cap that year, and then they only had to have him taking a $4 million a year cap hit going forward.
Right. So imagine if the Hornets could do something like that. Imagine if they make the trade with Indiana, you know, trading came into Indiana for basically nothing, and getting about $12 million under the cap, or trading him to Houston for, you know, Jordan Hill and some space, whatever. If they could get under the cap, I just think it would be interesting to kind of target somebody who's heading into free agency, and giving them a deal that both teams agreed to on the surface is a good deal, but essentially the Hornets throwing a lot of the money into it this year, so that for future years they, you know, they have a quality player at a low price, like, you know, whatever you might think.
Who are you thinking to do that for, though? Because it has to be your own player to give that kind of extension to.
Right. So it would be somebody that you would acquire in a trade, or, you know, somebody that, so there's a couple of guys, but one that, you know, sticks out, that's been rumored to be traded for Kamen, is somebody like Jordan Hill. So Jordan Hill is still a young guy. I think he could be a quality backup big, but he wouldn't be somebody that I would drool over in free agency, but I think he would take something like 3 years, 12 to 14 million. But what I'm saying is, if you could put most of that in signing bonus, and then essentially you would have somebody like Jordan Hill for 2 years and four million total on your cap for the next 2 years. I think that's something that Demp should pursue. He should, you know, find a list of guys, you know, that he could bring in, basically use the cap for this year in order to give them a quality asset on a young contract. I mean, even if you don't keep Jordan Hill and you just develop him, imagine how much stronger of a trade asset somebody like that is, you know, when they have a deal so far below their market value. So, you know, something like that where the Hornets could save money, pick up and that wouldn't go into your trade exception either. So I'm thinking of, you know, this magical three-team deal in which essentially the Hornets get a huge trade exception, a $10, $12 million trade exception, and somebody like Jordan Hill. And you could still use the trade exception in the future. You could pick up Jordan Hill, give him the bonus now, and then cheap years afterwards. Yeah. I just think there's a lot of creative stuff Dell could do, and I'm going to be really disappointed if the Hornets miss out on this opportunity.
Well, I agree that that's something to aim for. I'm going to be honest, and every time you said the word Jordan Hill, I cringed a little bit and died. but I agree, the concept is a good one.
Yeah, no, I mean,
the player is a terrible one.
There's a couple, I mean, terrible.
I mean, Houston didn't even pick up the guy's option. He's been so bad for them.
They wanted, he hasn't been horrible, but hey, two people cut Jeremy Lin. Come on.
Right.
That's going to be my excuse for every bad player. I'm just going to say, hey, Jeremy Lin eventually developed. But no, I mean, every guys like that, I mean, people knew coming out that Jordan Hill was going to need a couple of years. But this isn't going to be the Jordan Hill podcast.
That's right. Stop talking about Jordan Hill, because every time you say it.
I think that we praise Dell a lot, but I think that he's missed out on a couple of opportunities. I mean, why wasn't David West signed and traded to Indiana for the exact same contract? I'm sure he would have been willing to do that, and the Hornets would have a $10 million trade exception right now that they don't have.
Yeah.
There's just a lot of little opportunities that, you know, he's missing out on, and maybe you never use that trade exception, but what does it hurt to have it? So I just hope that Kamen doesn't go without the Hornets picking up some asset, and what I'm saying is the asset doesn't have to be a first-round pick. It could be a trade exception that – And this might be a reason why Dell's waiting, because think about it. The trade deadline is usually in a normal season late February. Well, if he trades Chris Kamen now to, let's say, the Pacers for the trade exception, that exception will end before the trade deadline of next year. If he trades Kamen to the Pacers on March 1st, he'll have a full year all the way through the offseason and all the way through next year's trade deadline to really use the power of that trade exception. So there's a lot of things that go into play, but I don't think people are we're going to get the bounty that people are thinking, but there's a lot of ways that Dell could eventually turn Kamen into assets down the line.
Yes, I agree.
Yay. Oh.
I'm just staring at the Western Conference standings, and this thing is so screwed up.
In what way?
I mean, Denver, which was the darling of the Western Conference for a while, is now 7th seed with a 16-12 record. Lakers are tied with them at 16-12. Houston is now 5th, 16-11. I mean, these teams are so tightly packed in. It's crazy.
And Minnesota's right about to hit the tough part of their schedule. Sitting at 13-15 and expect them to start falling.
Yeah, and Jeremy Lin is bringing New York back from the grave.
Speaking of, the Knicks are on the schedule this week.
Yeah.
Is that, first of all, are you a Jeremy Lin believer, whatever that means?
I think Jeremy Lin is a fine basketball player. I do not expect him to be putting up the kind of numbers he is doing right now. Say in 2 or 3 weeks.
Worse than Darren Collison.
I would say he's about the same.
Okay, so you're thinking like a start. He could be starting point guard in the league, like around 15-20. But a team will always be looking for an upgrade if he's there.
I mean, he might be a little better than that. I mean, here's the thing with Jeremy Lin. He played really limited time in Golden State, and of course, you know, Golden State has Steph Curry, so why would he be playing lots of minutes there? But when he actually played, he had like a PER of around 15. So as a rookie, he was an average player. So it's not surprising that he's playing pretty well. I mean, I just think that just like we saw with Jason Smith, it took, like last year, it took like a month, and then teams were prepared for him. And he actually saw some teams that had defensive ability to take. I mean, he's played teams that are either rock awful defensively or the Lakers. And we know what the Lakers, their big issue is that point guards tear them to pieces.
Right.
So, I mean, I don't expect him to be going for 28-38 regularly. But if he ended up being like an 18-6 or 18-7 point guard, for, you know, a Mike D'Antoni Knicks team, it wouldn't shock me.
Oh, that would completely shock me. But, all right, so if you had to guess, if I tell you in 2 months Jeremy Lin will be a backup point guard and just a story that of a couple of weeks when he was an aberration, would you guess it was because A, the league figured him out, or B, Carmelo Anthony poisoned his food? Is there any way that this could continue when Carmelo Anthony comes back? Will he allow it to continue?
Well, no, Carmelo Anthony's not going to allow it to continue, and neither is Amari Stoudemire. But even without those two, there's one name that just keeps popping into mind every time I see, you know, Lynn's sanity and all that stuff. Do you remember Flip Murray?
Oh, yeah.
So there was, for about 2 months...
I know him as Ronald, but go ahead.
Right. You know, it was by his first name.
Yeah, me and Ronald.
Bud's like that.
Yeah.
For 2 months, Ray Allen up in Seattle got injured. And Flip Murray stepped in his first game. He scored like 28 points. And he spent those 2 months scoring around 22 points a game for the Seattle Supersonics, because that team was geared to a shooting guard scoring, being one of their primary options. And he wasn't particularly efficient. He was okay. But he was now guaranteed in a lot of people's minds that he was a starter in the league. And if you remember, every year after that year, Flip Murray was struggling to be a sixth or seventh man on a team.
Yeah.
So, and I mean, you look at Dan Dickow, you look at Darren Collison with the Hornets. He averaged 19-9 for the Hornets when Paul went down as a starter.
Right.
And it's because the team's geared to that. And this is Mike D'Antoni's teams are point guard. Their offense is point guard driven. I mean, it's cut. Kind of half broken because it's having to go through Carmelo and Amari Stoudemire the way it is. So, I mean, Lynn is probably playing significantly above his abilities. I wouldn't be surprised if he ended up being a decent starting point guard in a Jameer Nelson kind of way, but I wouldn't also be surprised if he ended up being a backup for most of his career.
Yeah. Yeah. I would guess the latter if I had to, but it's interesting, but it's kind of frustrating with the, you know, the New York media, because if this guy was playing in 85% of the NBA cities,
yeah,
this just wouldn't be a star. I mean, I remember Josh Harrelson had a couple good games for the Knicks, and you see on ESPN New York stories about whether or not he could be their answer at, you know, the starting center position. I mean, it gets
right.
Ridiculous when it's New York. So,
in fact, I think I remember them saying that about Jordan Hill at some point.
Oh, I can't wait till Jordan Hill comes back and is a quality NBA player. But
so, other than the Knicks, we have Milwaukee and Utah coming in this week. Do you see any chance that either of those teams, the Hornets, have a good chance or even a moderate chance of, you know, snagging a win?
If I had to pick one, I mean, I think I went on record last week saying that if they didn't win that
Sacramento
game, that they are not going to win again until, you know, the All-Star break. If I had to pick one, I would, and I know it's the road one, but I would actually pick Milwaukee. I think if Chris Kaban could overcome his sprained ankle, I think that the Hornets could win with size in that matchup. I think Brandon Jennings is so hot and cold that maybe you catch him on one of his cold nights. And I think the only place where Milwaukee has a distinct advantage in that game is on the bench, where they have a lot of those hardworking guys that you know, coaches like. So I would guess Milwaukee if you told me they went 1-2 this week. That would be my guess. But
yeah,
they play hard, and they're a good team at home. So
yeah, Brandon Jennings is one of those guys who, you know, shoots you into and out of games, and it's either one or the other. There never is any middle ground with him, it seems.
Yeah.
So let's hope he's shooting him out of the game.
Yeah.
Or not. That's the thing. Even if he is shooting it and shooting them out of the game, that might actually make me just as angry as if he was shooting them into the game, because I want the Hornets to lose. So.
Yeah, it's a hard thing to admit. And, you know, it would be nice if some of these other bottom dwellers won a couple of games to give.
I know. What is Charlotte's problem?
Give us some breathing room so we could root for a win now. I mean, you know. The Western Conference is running away from the Hornets, but Charlotte just refuses to win a game. I mean, Washington won tonight. So it looks like maybe they could turn it around and be an 18-win team. Detroit won four straight. Everybody else is on the up and up, but Charlotte just refuses to pass us.
Yeah, and so this is something fun that will depress everybody listening. So if the season ended today, Hornets would have the second worst record in the league. Do you know what their chance of winning with their two picks in hand, what their chance of winning the lottery and getting Anthony Davis is?
I'd say 20%.
18.9.
That can't be possible because the second pick is 19.9.
It's right at the moment, it's like a 17.6% chance for the second pick. Well, actually, okay, you're right. I'm looking at this slightly wrong because there's some other ads being thrown in here. But it's just, it's so crappy.
Yeah.
I mean, does the lottery system bother you at all? Or do you like it?
This is unfair because when the Hornets were good or a little above average, I didn't like the way it was in that, a team that was 12th or 13th didn't have a chance, you know, that good of a chance at a top pick. I mean, it sucks. There's one franchise change in player in this draft, in my opinion.
Uh-huh.
And only one team out of the six or seven that are truly awful. I mean, I watched that Detroit game the other day, and I even pictured that team with Anthony Davis. And yeah, Anthony Davis and Monroe, that's a good start, whatever, two lefties, that'd be interesting. That team is horrible. And they have bad contracts all over their books.
And they beat us.
Toronto, same thing. I mean, there's some horrible franchises right now, and it's going to be hard for them to turn it around. So I don't think it matters. I think the Hornets need that Minnesota pick to get lucky, really, more than anything.
Right.
And
I think I played the lottery. You know, there's that little lottery tool on ESPN where, you know, you play the lottery and it randomly picks who wins and stuff. And then using Chad Ford's draft board, they order it. That thing scares the piss out of me because it doesn't matter if the Hornets are second, third, or fourth. And a lot of times they're sixth, by the way, because if anybody moves up, it ends up pushing the Hornets down to fifth or sixth sometimes. They take Andre Drummond every time, according to Chad Ford's board. Yeah. And I will cringe every time I play. So I've stopped playing it because it hurts me inside.
Yeah, okay, so let me ask you this. This is a question I've asked myself. I answered myself pretty quickly too, and people looked at me funny. But anyway, would you trade every single asset if I could guarantee you every single asset other than Eric Gordon? If I guaranteed you the number one pick, so the Hornets' first round pick, Minnesota's first round pick, Henry, Aminu, Kamen, everything that you could consider an asset outside of Eric Gordon. Would you trade that for a 100% chance at the number one pick this year?
Yes.
Yeah, I agree. I also think there might be something creative that the Hornets could do with Charlotte. Charlotte has a couple of bad contracts. For whatever reason, they were interested in Kamen, probably just to unload bad contracts. But what if Demps went to them and they said, and he said, look, we're both horrible teams. I'll give you Kamen, and I'll take on some of your bad contracts, whether it's Diop, Carroll, maybe even both. Now, granted, if the league let Demps do this, and all Demps wants in return is the opportunity
to swap picks,
the opportunity to be able to. So then you increase your chance because now essentially you have your own ping pong balls and Charlotte's.
Right, your owner, so it's 19.9, to correct my earlier misstatement, for the Hornets with their own pick.
And then 25 for Charlotte.
For Charlotte, and then 0.7% from currently, the way the standings are, for the 12th pick for Timberwolves. So
you take on bad, if if Charlotte came to you, I guess, would you take you wouldn't take on?
No, I'm not gonna take on bad contracts
next
of that
year,
sort.
Who cares? Just, next year don't matter anyway. You need to fill up your books.
Yeah, well, still, I mean, for a 20% chance increase,
I don't think,
I mean, 25%, I just don't, I don't
before,
buy it.
I don't think anything, and of course, in June when we're doing the podcast and we're talking about who the Hornets will take with the 3rd and the 11th picks, I'll be talking somebody else up, but there, I don't think anything matters other than getting Anthony Davis. I don't think the Hornets will have a shot again, you know, at a player like that. I think with Monty and Dell around and Eric Gordon, they'll always be good enough to be 7th, 8th pick as a worst-case scenario. So this is the one shot. I would do absolutely everything to give myself the chance at that number one pick.
I will point out that one time I played the draft on that thing, and the Hornets won the draft with the Timberwolves pick.
Ugh.
And then got the 4th pick of the draft with their own.
Oh.
Which is essentially what Cleveland pulled off last year.
Right.
Where they had a little bit better chance with the 2nd pick. But still, that would make me, oh my God. Anthony Davis plus a good chance at, like, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist or, what's his name, Sullinger?
Yeah, Davis and Kidd-Gilchrist would be the two I would take. And, yeah, that would be,
I'm worried about Kidd-Gilchrist. We'll talk more about the draft future, but I'm worried about Kidd-Gilchrist more. I've watched a couple more games of his, and I just, Corey Brewer's written all over him to me.
Nah, I don't know about that. Okay, but if you did play that draft lottery and the Hornets got the 2nd and 3rd pick, would you trade 2nd and 3rd for number 1?
Yes.
Yeah, me too. I'm telling you, it's whatever it takes to get that pick. But, all right, well, I guess, I want to give our friend Jason Calms a call in a little bit, but before we do, predictions on this week, we got, again, Utah at Milwaukee, and then every single horrible Lynn pun that you could imagine we hear on Friday night to start our weekend off.
Well, at least it's not going to be the Chris Paul show against the Knicks. I say Linsanity stops on February 17th when the Hornets come to town, and the Hornets win in New York against the Knicks on the 17th after losing to Utah and Milwaukee.
Wow. Yeah.
Because Carmelo Anthony comes back.
Yeah, I think the Hornets will be Linless this week. I think 0-3 again. I'm sticking with it. I think February 29th at home against Toronto, the Hornets win as Eric Gordon returns triumphantly.
Right, and dominates the game, scoring 28 points.
And then again, March 12th against Charlotte, that's another win. So there you go, Hornets fans. That's what.
Hey, and a couple days after, just a few days after that, they get Washington too.
Yeah, no, it's the schedule breaks beautifully in mid-March.
That's terrible. We want it to be horrible then.
Well, don't worry. That's what end of March and April are for. But all right, before Jason comes in, you got any other thoughts on the week? Trey?
No, you touched. I wanted to talk about Iona. We did that earlier. I mean, I'm hoping that he keeps getting the time. Jason Smith should be back shortly. I mean, probably for the next game. But I still hope Iona gets some good time and we get, you know, get to see him slowly moving into that primary backup big role I think he's very well suited for, and maybe beyond.
Yeah, and then that way we could start making our push to get him to become a sophomore, make the sophomore all-star team next year. The push starts now, Hornets fans.
That's
on
right.
Twitter, social media. Let's start that 2013 in New York City, Gustavo, sophomore all-stars.
All right, so let's go get Jason to join us. So hold on one second. Jason!
Yes.
So Michael wants to unleash some rants at us.
Okay, I probably deserve it.
You sound excited? No, I mean, it's nothing related to you guys, just a couple of things that have been bothering me lately, mostly sports related. Some are serious in nature, a little less serious, but I just kind of wanted to unleash them and have you guys be either my voice of reason or completely jump on board with me and start a change.
All right, shoot.
All right, so first one. Happened a lot during Super Bowl coverage. Saw it time after time. Just started to bother me. I would see Tom Coughlin, and I'm going to get the record wrong or whatever because I was so infuriated by what they were doing that I didn't really pay attention to the numbers themselves. But it would say something like, Tom Coughlin, 8-4 in 12 playoff games. Does that not bother either of you? Tom Coughlin is 8-4 in his 12 playoff games. Anything redundant there?
There's an enormous amount of redundancy in that sentence.
Could he have been 8-4 in 9 playoff games? Of course he's 8-4 in 12 playoff games. How many games could he have been in other than the amount? I mean, it just feels to me like, you know, it's a little bit of you know, just being condescending. Like, I can't add up 8 plus 4. It bothers me greatly, and I saw it time after time. They would show it over and over again. 8-4 in 12 playoff games. No shit.
You're the one who keeps saying you're not a numbers guy.
And I'm not, but I could add 8 plus 4. I don't need you to tell me how many playoff games that equals. It's just bothers. So, Ryan, it doesn't seem like it bothers you. Jason, does that bother you at all?
A good bit. There are a lot of things that bother me about this. For one thing, the addition, right? For another thing, the four losses are not all created equal, right? Because when you lose, you're out, right? And those wins just allow you the opportunity to lose again, right? So in this case, a win and a loss are by no means equal. It's not a fixed number of playoff games that you get to play. So it's a completely different probability distribution. It is, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And what difference does it make? What matters to me is the team and the fact that he has gone through a lot of playoff games with Eli Manning and other key players is more important than what he has gone through to me. Right? You know, Gruden, right? I mean, he went through it with different teams, different quarterbacks, different systems. You know, to some extent, that makes a difference. But this guy's really only done it with somebody else. So is he the belle of the ball, right? Or is he just in the entourage?
All right, so you're bothered by credit. Yeah, I'm bothered by sheer redundancy. I mean, it's some producer's job or some guy's lone job to put, you know, up that bottom scrawl or the little, if it's a headline at the head, what is it at the bottom? Is it a low line? Whatever. When it's at the bottom of Tom Coughlin's little chest when he's sitting there at the press conference and it says Tom Coughlin 8-4 in 12 playoff games. Whatever. That's somebody's job. And the fact that they just did that, I mean, I remember I lived in South Florida growing up, and I used to see this one sign, exit 13. It would say exit 13 in 0.2 miles. And that pissed me off every time that I drove past it. Why? I mean, at what point do we stop reducing fractions? Why didn't that sign say 0.4 miles or, you know, 8.40? It's whatever. It just, it's somebody's job and they're not doing their job right. So that got me mad and it led me back to my childhood. I'm just kind of unleashing all of this now. It's coming back to me. So anyway,
As a balancing point, there's a town called West Mississippi in the north central part of the state. So
and there's also a town in Indiana called French Lick.
There
okay.
you go.
I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway, that was just a warm-up one to get us started, but that bothered me, and I think now people listening to this when they watch SportsCenter from now on, as if there's not enough to get angry about in the sporting world. That'll just be something else that'll get a rise out of you. But okay, number two. Number two rant is, I really don't think we're being proactive enough in creating rules for the next evolution of human being. Like, I'll just go out there. Maybe I watch a little too much sci-fi, but I truly do believe that in my lifetime, there will be somebody with what we consider mutant or superhuman powers. And I just don't think the rule books are ready for that. If somebody picked up a basketball right now and flew to the other side of the court and dunked it, technically they would be able to do that now. And I think that they're going to want to retroactively tweak the rules for that person. And I don't think that'll be fair at that point. I think that you almost have to assume now that evolution will be such, or alien crystals will be touched, or whatever, to where somebody will have some kind of mutant or superhero power, and you have to be very clear in the rules now of what you're going to do about that when it gets here.
I think it's called drug testing.
So you think it's just drug-based? You don't think...
And in your case, they might need to expand to the Watcher.
We've seen shows like Heroes. You don't think this is possible in our lifetime, that somebody will have, you know, some kind of telekinesis power or something along those lines?
No.
There is a case.
Oh.
And it's a little more earthbound than you may like. But do you remember this runner that was in question? I thought it was with the Olympics, but it might have been another world-sanctioning running organization. But her name was, I believe, Semenya. And there was some question as to whether Semenya was
male or female.
100% female.
Right.
And there was this gender definition thing. So from that point of view, from the point of view of strength, speed, fast twitch muscles, things like this, Semenya was at least superwoman. And to the extent of them trying to retroactively disqualify Semenya, or say you can keep the win but not the medal, or you can keep this stuff but you can never compete again, dot, 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 dot. And it sort of went away, and I believe they just said, let's not worry about this. But they were digging into whether the parents had made a choice at birth and other sorts of deep genetic stuff. This is the closest I can get, right?
Yeah.
To that at this time. And as someone who knows a little bit about the race of evolution, I don't think we have to worry about it in our lifetime.
No.
Okay.
I was writing about this when you called.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay. Well.
So wait. I have a rant.
Go ahead.
I have a rant about people who try to like talk about evolution as if it's something that occurs in our lifetime, that people evolve.
Oh, I think people like this are already out there. I'll share with you. Want to know something that I honestly do? I'll admit this and embarrass myself. This is what I honestly do. Whenever I'm in a large group of people, I assume that there is somebody with mind reading abilities in that room. And I will say, this is no joke, I will say a general statement in my head, and it'll usually go something like this. It'll be, I know you have the ability to read minds. I have a power to meet me outside in 5 minutes. And I will go outside and in the hopes that somebody who's a mind reader, you know, kind of buys this BS that I'm throwing this way. But I honestly believe that people with some of these powers exist on some level. And I test it out whatever chance I get. But, okay, well, then let's have a mock conversation right now. Let's say that we're the three commissioners of a sport, let's say football, and somebody has the ability not to fly, but let's say hover. And they hover 8 to 10 feet in the air. Now, we have to make rules for this person. Let's call him Feli Ranning. And Feli Ranning could float 8 to 10 miles in the air, so he never gets touched by the defensive lineman. He takes the shotgun snap in the air. He he has all day. What kind of rules would we put in place? I mean, would we just kick him out of the league?
Yes.
We would just kick him out of the league. So now we have a class action suit on our hands. You can't just remove him from the league. I don't know. I just think that we have to get out ahead of this, and I don't hear anybody talking about it, so I wanted to start the conversation.
Well, there's this this place nearby. It's the state hospital, where I'm sure you could find a lot of people who'd like to discuss this.
Oh man, see, there's always people. You don't believe. You want to deal with the present, and you don't want to be proactive. That's fine.
All right, let's let the mathematician answer. I'll stop mocking you. And
yeah,
you have to touch the ground every 5 yards.
Every 5 yards? So
yes.
He's a quarterback. He's just
so you want to allow the flips. You want to allow the flips, I guess what I'll call Darren Sproles type plays. So they should be able to leap and flip and stuff like that, but you don't want them to just hover the 80 yards down the field or 100
right,
plus if it's on a kickoff.
But in this scenario, he's a quarterback and he's basically sitting in the shotgun. He's not moving forward or backwards. He's just sitting there and waiting for his receivers to get open. He has infinite.
So he's essentially, that's equivalent of just being very tall and like tree trunks, right? You're just not going to sack the guy, but he still has to throw the ball to the receiver.
After 30
he'd
seconds.
Have a completely different throwing motion, too. I don't know who would coach him because he'd be throwing down. It's like end of the game.
Oh, I think he'd make it work, but. All right. No, I'm just saying in a couple of years, you know, people are wondering when the first gay athlete is going to come out while he is still playing. And I'm saying that in certain sports, we will have our first superhero athlete before that happens. And we have to get out in front of it. But whatever, you guys don't want to jump on board with me, then that's fine. All right, fine. This one is a little bit more serious. It's very serious, actually, so I kind of have to shift gears. But the list of most unpopular athletes came out recently. And if you look at that list, even though when you consider – I don't know how many sports you guys consider major. I think in America it's between 5 and 6, the Big Four plus NASCAR – and golf as far as just the numbers of viewership, whatever. When you look at those six sports, it's a pretty even mix of Caucasians and minorities, whatever. Yet on this most disliked list, athlete after athlete is African-American. There are two exceptions. One, Chris Humphreys, who is mixed, he's biracial, and two, at number 10, is Kurt Busch, all the way, at the end of that top 10 list. Otherwise, it's just African-American after African-American, from Tiger Woods to LeBron James, Michael Vick, Kobe Bryant. I don't know, just Ndamukong Suh. Yeah, some of those guys on those lists have done bad things off the field, but the majority are, I don't know, it just bothers me. It bothers me for a couple of reasons, but I guess starting off this conversation, does the fact that list is so dominated by one race in a just blank question of name the athletes you dislike, does that bother either of you at all?
Wow, you're dropping actual serious thought on me now.
Yeah.
Well, the polling method immediately comes to mind for me. So who are they asking and how? And any poll that had Kurt Busch at 10 and not way higher is flawed. Because he is loathsome. He is loathsome. You can look up what he did on YouTube to Dr. Punch. And, I mean, he is purposefully infuriating, and part of me actually thinks like, wow, that should be studied, because he's really good at it. He is loathsome, and so is his brother Kyle.
And I mean, you have two guys on the list who allegedly committed crimes, one convicted, one not, but you have Kobe and Michael Vick, so you could even make that argument. But if you notice, Ben Roethlisberger's not on that list, a two-time accused rapist who just happens to be white, but in the most popular sport in America, and, you know, Tiger Woods cheated on his wife, but didn't get accused of anything. And it's very strange to me. You know, when I saw that, how is Ndamukong Suh number four? I mean, he plays a little bit dirty, but to me, Philip Rivers is the biggest a-hole in the NFL. I mean, there's just something wrong with that list, and I don't know if it's a chicken or an egg thing. I think the media covers the stories of the disgraced black athletes way different than the white ones as well.
Haynesworth had a way worse stomp than Love the other day, right? Or Sue on Thanksgiving. I mean, he stomped on a helmetless guy with his cleats and tore his forehead up. Now, I mean, I could flippantly say, oh, but that was against the cowboy. But, I mean, come on. I mean, Haynesworth is an animal.
And that's funny. I didn't even think of the Kevin Love thing, but it's true. I mean, Ndamukong Suh is one of the most hated guys, and essentially his worst act is what white bread Kevin Love just did the other night. I don't know. It seriously bothered me, and wanted to see if it was the same way with either of you guys.
Polls like that tell you more about the people asking the questions and the information that the people who are answering them have. That's my feeling.
Well, I don't necessarily believe that. I mean, there's always more, less forgiveness in the case of a black athlete, in my opinion. Once they've made the impression, no one ever gives them any sort of chance for redemption. Because Tiger Woods, that's frickin' stupid to me. I mean, the fact that Tiger Woods is anywhere on a top 10 most disliked list is absolutely freaking ridiculous.
Yeah. Or even LeBron. I mean, what did LeBron James really do? I mean, he made a stupid decision with the decision, but even that gave, you know, it built a whole boys and girls club.
The shirt was worse.
Yeah. Yeah, the okey-doke shirt was bad. But no, I mean, to me, it's just, and even with the Hornets, I mean, it comes back to the Hornets because just a lot of, you know, even with all the good he did, a lot of hate or anger thrown Chris Paul's way. But in reality, to me, there's really only one person to blame, and it was George Shin. And he should get 100% of the blame 100% of the time for 100% of the situations. But then you saw, you know, you just saw fans siding with owners in this whole battle, and it's no secret that the owners are mostly white. The players are mostly black, and I don't know. I the poll just kind of irked me because it just brought a lot of those things together, and
yeah.
I don't know. A little more serious. Sorry to take it there, but it was on my list. Last one will be a little lighthearted, like the other ones, but just something that's always bothered me, and I've only seen this happen in movies. Because I haven't seen somebody hunted down and murdered in real life, so I could only go on movies, but I imagine it happens in real life as well. But I'll set the scene for you. So basically, you got a madman killer, and he's shooting up people in a bank or a house or wherever, and then one stray person gets loose, and they just dart across a field that has no trees. You know, the killer, the marksman, whatever, sets his sights. And from 60, 80, 100 yards away, just guns said person down as they run away. And it's just always bothered me, and I imagine that people do this in real life too, that they just run in a straight line. You know how much infinitely harder that shot is if you zigzag or take almost any other course of action. And I don't know. Maybe it's just something that bothers me, and maybe I'm giving people warning as well. If you are ever being hunted down, and the killer is just do that cold thing where he sits and he doesn't run after you, and you're running away, zigzag, 4 feet left, seven right, three left, two straight, you know. Just something that always bothered me, and I watched the Swedish versions of the girls with the dragon tattoo or whatever, and she did it, and that was just kind of the last straw for me, so wanted to know if it bothered you guys as well.
I always love the people who run away from falling trees, away from the tree in the direction it's falling. All you have to do is, like, run sideways 15 feet, and you're probably pretty good, but no, you got to run the entire length of the tree as it's falling on you.
And you run toward the base where you do
right.
it. That way the branches don't hit you.
Right.
So I have no problem with the depiction, because I think the depiction is the most realistic thing, one of the most realistic things you'll see in the movies, right? The dates never work out that way. The going fast over train tracks never worked the way it did in Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Right, but that human stupidity is often reflected brilliantly, probably because the director is an expert.
Well, good. This made me feel better to kind of get this off. Has this brought on any rants inside of either of you? Anything?
Well, you know what they should do, because, you know, if you watch movies like The Matrix, this makes perfect sense. If you just do a cartwheel when you're running, it doesn't actually change where your body is in space, but if you do a cartwheel, people are so impressed they'll miss you.
Right.
Because that's what they do in The Matrix. Like those guys are shooting at them in The Matrix, and they run up the wall and do like a sideways somersault. Now, their torso, which would be presumably what you would shoot at, is in the exact same position the entire time. It's just rotating. But because you're running up the wall, they can't hit you.
Yeah.
So,
play basketball,
you know,
in The Matrix?
What?
Did they play basketball in The Matrix? I'm trying to figure out if there's more data for Michael's earlier question.
Yeah, that's perfectly true. I mean, if we found somebody who could bend the rules, maybe it's Matrix style, but yeah, it does all tie together.
So wait, are you now saying we're all brains in a vat and we're going to have Neo show up on the basketball court?
You guys be brains in a vat.
I mean, anything. If Jeremy Lin continues playing like this, he might be Neo. I don't know, but I don't know. I think it's going to happen. It's going to happen, and people are going to find this podcast, and then they're going to start being suspicious of me, as
right.
if I was blowing the whistle on my other superhero friend. So.
So I've been saving a Jeremy Lin comment.
Go ahead.
He's a good player on a bad team. The end.
So, all right. You're
everybody
not
a, says it about everybody else, but I've been dying to say it about the Knicks.
It's true. And even if Carmelo comes back, it's still the case.
Yeah. I mean, there was points this year where Jared Jack, in a four-game stretch, had brilliant numbers, so... We'll see where
Trevor
he goes. Jason, how are you hanging in as a Hornets fan this year? What's the concern? Are you watching a lot more college basketball to try to prepare for the draft? Are you watching our young guys? What are you doing to get yourself through these games?
So on the college basketball front, last night while I was eating my burger, which was half burger, half hot sausage with corned beef, pepper jack cheese, and an egg, which was awesome. I noticed that two games were on TV.
Okay.
I believe one of the teams won one of the games. The other one hadn't finished by the time I left. So if that constitutes more college basketball, then I'm watching more college basketball. Oh, and I had limoncello cake, which was very good.
Limoncello, that's... That's one of the students in my wife's fifth grade class.
Limoncello?
It's pronounced Limoncello.
this was limoncello.
Oh,
an Italian thing.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said limoncello. Limoncello is actually doing well this semester. Thank you. But okay. Now, let me ask you this. If you do watch the college games, or when you do watch, and And you know that, you know, a guy is somebody that the Hornets could take in the lottery. Is there anything that, even though they're 18, 19, 20 years old, automatically turns you off, and regardless of whatever skills they have, you say, nope, that's a deal breaker. Don't want that guy anywhere near the Hornets.
You know, so actually one of the games last night that was on TV was the Ohio State game, right? And so I was certainly looking, it was Ohio State, Michigan State, and I was certainly looking for something to make me excited or not. Frankly, as far as on the court, there's really nothing that would turn me off to them. Off the court, when you're a dumb kid, there's not a whole lot that would you could do that would upset me that wasn't already a crime, right? So not really. I do think that certain things would happen would put them out of my trade space just because of how I think Monty and Dell think.
How about you? Do you watch any of these college games and just see something that would turn you off if they're displaying certain habits now?
The whiners always bug me.
Really?
Yeah, the whiners bug me because, I mean, it's a completely irrational response because Tim Duncan may have been the biggest whiner in college. I mean, he whined in college as much as he does now. He always has that shocked, I can't believe you're calling me look on his face.
Yeah.
So it does turn me off and make me wish, you know, yeah, I don't really want that guy to be picked for my team. But again, you know, how often was Chris Paul talking to the ref? Probably about half the game.
Yeah.
So I'm completely irrational about that. But yeah, whenever I see people complaining in college too much, it's just kind of like one of those things. It's like, you're an amateur. Shut up.
See, I think not making an effort to get back on defense is I watched a lot of college basketball this weekend, and there's a guy, Arnett Moultrie.
Yeah. From Missouri.
Yeah, no, he's Mississippi State.
Yeah, sorry.
And he's right. Somebody that started off the year mid first round, then late lottery. I think NBADraft.net has him going number 5 or 6 in their latest mock draft. So he's definitely a guy that could be in the running with the Minnesota pick. And just time after time, he just didn't care. And you see, I guess even beyond that, it's the guys that give 100% on offense and are always have their hand up and saying they're open. And then when they don't get the ball, just have no care of getting back on defense. I just don't think that could be taught. And I think that just says so much more about their personality and eye over team concept that he's already been crossed off my board. Sorry, Arnett, you are not on my list of guys I want.
He just wanted to make that pun about its name.
No, I just thought of it now, and it was I even almost thought about it too late to where I'm hoping we could go back and edit this and it sounds a little better. Yeah, that's the deal breaker for me, but I've actually had a lot of fun watching college basketball this year just for, you know, the sole reason that the Hornets will have two of the top 12 picks and might even get a third first-rounder in this Cayman trade.
No, I think we need to have a call just about the draft, one of these podcasts. What do you think?
I think that's pretty much what every podcast should be about. We just try to masquerade it by talking about Trevor Ariza or Jared Jack for some ungodly reason.
I think we'd have to avoid talking about Anthony Davis because, you know, we don't want to have people turned off by the sheer naked lust in our voices.
I want to bring on some Cleveland bloggers from last year. No, I seriously do. I want to see how they dealt with this. I think we're kind of blessed that we're going to get this season over with, you know, a lot faster than usual, only have 66 games in a condensed time. I still think if this is the year that you're going to be horrible, this is the best year to do it.
All right. Well, I guess we're done talking then. Unless either of you guys have something else to add.
Jason, anything over there?
No.
All right. Well, thanks again for hearing out my rants, guys. I appreciate it.
Yeah. And thanks, everybody, for listening to In the Know. We'll be back next week when we have a lot more wins to talk about, I'm sure. or something like that.
And Mind Reader, if you're out there, email me at McNamaraHornets247@yahoo.com. I know you hear me. Let's have the phone talk to me each and every day.